John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And joining us is Jake Heaps. And so, Jake, a lot of things as we head into June, which, you know, the roster is at 90 right now. Still, there's going to be two more weeks of virtual off-season programs, if not longer. We'll see how long that's going to go. But I guess, you know, the big news this week, we'll get into Debbie and Clowney here in a second, is that Carlos Hyde, and we get the numbers today, and they turned out much better than I think anybody thought, because if indeed, as Mike Silver reported, that they offered 1 year's $3 million for Devontae Freeman, and he said no because he's holding out to his number, they were able to get Carlos Hyde, one of 16,000-yard backs last year, for 1 year, $2.75 million.
Wow, that's a huge hit, John. Honestly, when the initial numbers broke down, it was kind of peculiar when you look at Carlos Hyde, what he could provide. Obviously, you know, he came off a 1,000-yard season, but also, as you know, you never want to be in a position where you have to pay an aging running back. And so with those numbers, I figured, John, that they might be more incentive-based than anything else. It's very good to see those numbers, which I think will continue to allow the Seahawks to have flexibility. As you know, they're never done in an offseason. They're always going to keep things open. And with a group like that, to have a deal with Carlos Hyde, I like it, because now it gives you some more flexibility and also gives you more depth at a position where they desperately needed it. And when they haven't had it, John, it's cost them.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, that's the thing, because, you know how bad I am following contracts. I follow them like every minute of my life, trying to, you know, guess the numbers and see where it's going to be. And I kind of figured that, you know, the market right now for any of the top remaining running backs was three or less, and they were able to get him for the less and, you know, get a back that I think was a better fit for this offense than maybe Devontae Freeman, who had more star power. But I think that what you're looking at is that, you know, Hyde is a good first and second down back, good 229-pound back. And if, you know, you have any injury concerns with Chris Carson, he can fill in.
Absolutely. And that's a huge thing for them, John, honestly. You look at what happened to him in this playoff run. I think that ultimately could be the deciding factor between them moving on to the NFC Championship. And so, you know, John, as you kind of break these numbers down, where do you think that the Seahawks are at? I'm genuinely curious about, you know, the move that you could see them potentially making with a offseason that still, as you look at the roster, doesn't seem quite finished yet.
Yeah, but I mean, the one urgent need, because again, you know, they've been picking him off one at a time. They needed to get a veteran backup quarterback so they get Geno Smith back. They, you know, certainly needed to do something at the running back position, and they did. And now one of the last pieces is going to be, I think, defensive tackle, run-stopping defensive tackle. I don't know if they can, you know, get Damon Snacks Harrison. You know, I don't know about Marcel Darius, but that's kind of like one of the last pieces. And then I think maybe the last piece would be Josh Gordon if he gets reinstated in the league, because I think that he fit in very well, and he can challenge for the third receiver spot.
Yeah, that all makes sense to me, John. Honestly, when you look at how everything's breaking down for them, they're not going to be able to, you know, fork out any big contracts here late in the game. And that's where I'm interested, John, where you think a guy like Damon Snacks Harrison or Mike Daniels, for example, as well. I think that's a name that kind of quietly gets forgotten about just because I think that he's a pretty good pass rusher. So if you're looking at two different types of defensive tackles, you got Snacks Harrison, who's more of that, you know, run stopper, who's had that great ability all of his career. And then Mike Daniels is more of a guy who could do a little bit of both. Which guy do you think would be more fitting for them, John?
Well, it depends on the number, but I think that because the one thing is that you have all these five techniques that can move inside to rush the passer. So you have plenty of inside pass rush because you've got Collier, you've got Green. You know, they can all do that. And so those two options are going to be there. And you also have Brandon Jackson, if he's going to be on the team, they can play some defensive tackle. But, the one thing that I think they need more is the run stopper. Now, again, Jaron Reed's a good run stopper. Puna Ford's a good run stopper. But they don't have that third guy that can be the good run stopper. I mean, Daniels is almost like in that same boat, I guess you could say, as Carlos Rogers, is that you know, he can maybe come in and you know, do a little bit of both, but he's going to be cheaper because, you know, Snacks was a $9 million defensive tackle. He's obviously going to probably have to get five or less, and maybe as low as three. But you might be able to pull Daniels in for $2 million.
Yeah, that would be interesting to me, John, in terms of where they go down that line. And obviously, I'm right there with you. I think Snacks Harrison is the guy that I look at, and I still think he has a lot left in the tank. Although he had a dip in production last year with the Detroit Lions, I think that that was more so of a player. You witnessed a player, a very good player, just really not like the organization and the coach that he was a part of with Matt Patricia. And you know, he had said that he basically kind of self-sabotaged himself with his weight to try and get himself out of Detroit. Obviously, that didn't work out well. But you have to imagine that if he came to Seattle, that he would be much more motivated knowing that he was on a Super Bowl contending team. And you just look at the numbers from a pure defensive tackle standpoint, he's got the ability in him to be a dominant run stopper. So I would love that addition, John, next to Jaron Reed.
The other one I haven't heard much about, which, again, it depends on the numbers, is Marcell Dareus, because he was a former Pro Bowl player. I mean, I would, you know, again, the market right now is in that $3 million range. Now, again, you can see guys like Devonta Freeman. It's like, oh, I'm not going to take $3 million. I want to go for my number. I mean, you got Jadeveon Clowney going through the same thing himself. I want to play for my number. But if you can't get it, when do you do?
Yeah, it's a great point, John. And that's honestly why I didn't bring up Dareus, because you know, you look at the cap hit that he was just coming off of with Jacksonville. It was a $20 million cap hit. So that's a lot for a player in that position to once be in that position to the very next year saying, nope, sorry, you've got to take a $2, $3 million payday here in wave three of free agency. That's very tough for those guys, you know, from a pride standpoint and a confidence standpoint, in the sense that they still believe that they can contribute at a very high level. So that's kind of the mix that you get yourself in. And especially with Clowney, it's interesting, John, because all of the teams that are playoff contenders, in my read so far, and I'd love to get your take on this, is in my read so far is that if Clowney wants to truly play for a playoff contending team and a great organization, he's going to have to take a significant pay cut on a one-year deal. And I'm honestly surprised that he turned down Cleveland, you know, when they were offering that multi-year deal at the price point that he wanted. It just goes to show that he's kind of, I don't know if the reality quite sets into his expectations.
Obviously it doesn't, because, I mean, I know Bus Cook real well, and Bus is a very good agent. So I think that Clowney's dictating this. And my read, although I don't know for sure, is that the offer that might have been, you know, $17 or $18 million from Cleveland was right in March and not necessarily now. Because, you know, realize if they would do something with Clowney, you got Myles Garrett, you know, going to be on the 50-year option coming up here soon. And he's, you know, one of the better defensive ends in football. You got $15-plus million in Olivier Vernon, $3.75 in Adrian Claiborne. I mean, you know, the one that would have to go would be Olivier Vernon. So I throw this back to you. Would Olivier Vernon be a good $3 million option for the Seahawks?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you look at $3 million options here, if that was how it transpired, Olivier Vernon would be a tremendous option at that point, and honestly would be a steal at the price point. Now, if you're talking about paying Olivier Vernon, you know, $10 million plus, that's where I think you and I, we could have a debate back and forth on whether we think that that would be a great fit or not. But at $3 million, absolutely. I think that he's more proven than anybody else that's on this roster currently in terms of his ability to get after the quarterback. You know, I'm very excited about the Benson Mayoa signing, John. But here's the reality. His greatest success is when he played 20%, in that range of 20 to 30% of his snaps. So this is not a frontline every down starter in the league, and that's the difference there. If you're talking about a great rotational pass rusher, Benson Mayoa is awesome. He fits that bill in a tremendous way. A frontline pass rusher, that's a different conversation.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, if you can find a way, because, you know, you kind of figure the way this is looking, if indeed Bruce Irvin, you know, does get a chance to start a strong side linebacker, because I know he even got it from Benson, that he said that, yeah, right now the plan is for Bruce to be strong side linebacker and then come in on passing downs and put his hand in the ground. I mean, if you can maybe take that rotation, depending on how good Benson is stopping the run. I mean, maybe you can limit him to 20% because you still have Daryl Taylor, who could start. But if he doesn't, then you go to Mayoa, and then you come back and you have Alton Robinson as another option.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's ultimately, John, I'm very curious. I think when you look at this roster right now, there are more question marks than there are certainties right now. But if some of those question marks pan out, and I'll give you a few of those question marks, you've got your edge rushing situation. Do one of those four guys or two of those four guys step up in a big way this offseason or this season? Does Marquise Blair become the player that you're hoping he would be as a high second round pick? Quentin Dunbar, obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with the legality of that situation. He's a guy that could be a key to helping making that defense better. And Jordan Brooks, just on the defensive side of the ball, you look at those questions, those are some big questions, and if they turn out to be positive, could really help this defense in a major way.
Yeah, but particularly, I mean, except for maybe the defensive end position, and again, there's four options that are there, including Urban, if he does have some early down opportunities at defensive end. But again, you know, it's like there's more linebackers right now than starting spots, and it's quality, and there's more defensive backs right now than starting spots because, you know, you still have Trey Flowers. You still don't know about Dunbar. You know you got two Pro Bowl caliber safeties, and then you still have to find a way, if you can, to get Blair on the field. Hey, so what do you have in the show today?
We are actually going to take a little bit of a look at what's going on with the baseball world and obviously the back and forth that's going on there. I think that we're running up on a little bit of a deadline here to get the season started the way they want. And also, we're going to take a deep dive into Pete Carroll's philosophy. So I think that it's something that I think when you're talking about, let Russell cook, we're going to take a deep dive into what that really means, John.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, don't let him cook too much passing because, again, as great as he is as a passer, the pass blocking has to be up there. Remember, the guy's been sacked 99 times in 2 years, and this team has had its best success, you know, when you get a run going, and I think they can get the run going because I know there's debates on the offensive line, but I do think it has a chance to be a little bit better than last year. Hey, so Tom, Jake, and Stacey coming up at 12. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. Anytime.
Okay. Hey, you can listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we get out the report card. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
In a report card we get out every day, we look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We take the stories, we take the anecdotes, we take the social media comments, we will take the voices, and we attach a grade to it. Curtis Rogers does the report card each day, and so I guess you can look back. And I don't know, how do we feel about the strange thing going on in baseball right now where thousands of minor leaguers are being released? And I know the Mariners have a whole bunch. They're at least honoring the stipends and things of that nature, which I think is, you know, good, much better than the Oakland A's. But boy, I mean, a lot of these minor league players, you know, I think many of them won't be able to even go for unemployment. It's going to be kind of strange.
Yeah, you know, they don't make a lot of money as it is, and not having the ability to apply for unemployment and not being able to collect a paycheck is brutal. It's an F for those kinds of franchises that have made that kind of decision, specifically the Oakland A's. I think it's much better to release these guys and allow them to collect that because, you know, in this time where finances are tight for just about everybody, to not allow them an opportunity to either to seek employment elsewhere or to just, you know, pay them the $400 that they're making a week, which, you know, is pennies really for these billionaire owners to pay. I give those organizations an F. The Mariners, they, you know, released a good chunk of minor leaguers yesterday too. I think it's around between about 30 and 45 or so that got released. But they are able to pay the rest of their minor leaguers that stipend they've been giving them. So I give the Mariners, I'll give them, you know, a C+ in total. I'll give them a B+ for continuing to pay the minor leaguers that are still in the organization. John, let's get started on the report card today. Do you have an extra $1,500 a night lying around and nine friends you'd want to spend a night in a minor league ballpark with?
I think I might want to pass on that one.
Okay. Well, if you do, if you have a group of 10 and you got $1,500 lying around, the Pensacola Blue Wahoos, a double-A team in Florida, have listed their stadium on Airbnb for fans to rent in lieu of a minor league season. And get this, in the couple of days that they have been listed on Airbnb, they are booked through the end of June. It is swept. Really, the internet and fans of that team, you get to stay in a minor league ballpark for a night. They have converted the clubhouse into two queen-size beds and also four bunk beds for your group of 10 people to stay. You get pretty much free reign of the ballpark. You can do whatever it is that you want. So, John, how are we grading this minor league team going a creative route in order to make money when it doesn't look as though there's going to be a minor league season at all?
Well, I'll give the team a B+ because, again, it's if it has that kind of reaction and you can get that all together and get it all booked through the end of June, good for them. I think I'd give the people that are renting it more of a D because it's like, really want to go to a minor league baseball park and sleep? I mean, I don't get that. I mean, what else can you do? I mean, it's like, you're just going there. I mean, you can sleep at home and save the money.
You can. I think it's the novelty of being able to say, I spent the night at a minor league stadium. They're the current double-A affiliate of the Minnesota Twins. I give the marketing team of that franchise an A for just having the idea and the execution of it. And now they're, $1,500 a night for the next month. That's a revenue stream, so shout out to them for getting it done.
But here's where the problem is. What if the A's franchise decides, they can maybe do something in one of their minor league teams? The problem is the players that they all let go, not getting the $400 stipends, won't be able to afford it.
Yeah. Just a bad look for the Oakland A's franchise. Speaking of minor leaguers getting their stipends, John, the L.A. Dodgers, they have announced that they're going to continue to pay their minor leaguers their weekly stipend. And get this, Dodgers pitcher David Price, who he signed a pretty big deal with the Boston Red Sox a couple of years ago. They traded him to L.A. this offseason. He has yet to pitch in any game for the Dodgers franchise. But he yesterday made the commitment that he will pay each of the team's minor leaguers $1,000 each out of his own pocket. That's in addition to the weekly stipend those minor leaguers are going to receive. So David Price giving all those minor league guys $1,000 each just to get them through this time or get them through like the next couple of weeks here. So how are we grading that gesture by Dodgers lefty David Price?
Well, the price is right, so I'm going to give it an A because that's just great to take it out of his pocket, care about the people that he probably doesn't even hardly know, or many of the people he's never probably had a chance to really be with much. So I'm going to give him an A.
Yeah, I'm giving him an A as well, and I think that's something in baseball that you see from star level players all the way down is that they know the road that it takes to get to the majors. Everybody goes through the minor leagues. Very rarely do players debut in the major leagues, and they know those long bus rides and just how hard it is to survive on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day. So to have a veteran like that, somebody who has his wealth taken care of, to make a gesture like that is an incredible, incredible thing that David Price is doing for those minor league players. And then finally, John, let's go to the NFL here. Melvin Gordon, Broncos running back. He was on an Instagram live session yesterday and was asked his thoughts about playing games in front of empty stands. And he said it's not going to be a big deal to him for a pretty interesting reason.
How would it feel if you go into these games and there's no fans in the stadium? I know there's been a lot of talk about there being fanless games. Like, could you imagine playing a football game with no fans or there being crowd noise pumped into the stadium?
Bro, we didn't have fans. Anyway.
Oh man, Charger fans, they're not gonna make it to hell.
Man, we didn't have many Charger fans at the game. I'm gonna be honest, we didn't have many Charger fans at the game. Much loyalty, love, but we ain't had many, so I'm not missing anything.
So Melvin Gordon says it won't be a big deal to him because he's used to playing in front of empty stands from his days with the Chargers. How are we grading?
Got to give that a B+. That was great. I mean, it's just a great line, and it's true. You've been down there, and there's going to be more non-Charger fans are going to be for the more the team that they're playing against than there is Charger fans. And, you know, here it was in the StubHub Center, which, you know, at the most was only going to hit 29,000 people. So, yeah, I think that you can see it. I remember, I'm sure in the back of his mind was that one game that they played, I think it was in 2018 against Arizona, where there was the Arizona fans at that point, because the Cardinals were so bad, didn't have any fans over there. And so there's hardly anybody in the stands.
Yeah, if the Chargers can't even fill up a 29,000 seat stadium, how are they going to fill up their new stadium, SoFi Stadium, which I believe has a capacity of what, like 80,000? It's just no way that's going to happen. It's going to be basically a ninth home game for every team that plays the Chargers.
Exactly. Pretty crazy. But yeah, good line by Melvin Gordon. And you can still see he's a little bit bitter that the, you know, with the holdout last year. And then, you know, he turned down the $10 million offer. He had to take $8 million to go to the Broncos. But great line by Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, that is it for today's report.
Hey, be sure to check out the Professor's Notes on 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5. Coming up next on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, we are taking your text questions at 710-710.
You're listening to the Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And it is time to take your text questions. You can text us at 710-710. The 710-710 text line is brought to you by Vizzy Hard Seltzer. And so, Curtis, what do we have?
John from the 425, they want to know, how's Will Disley's rehab coming along?
Everything seems to be right on schedule. I know that even, you know, last year when you see him in the locker room and all that, he seemed to be a little bit ahead of schedule. So I think everything is, you know, looking that he should be there for the start of the regular season. Nobody's heard of any setbacks.
From the 425, they want to know, based off of his contract, you think this is Bradley McDougald's final season with the Seahawks?
I get the feeling, yeah. I mean, again, that's why you hope that, because, you know, at some point they've got to do something with Marquise Blair. You know, they've got a great situation with Quandre Diggs because he came over at the free safety position, and Blair's more of a strong safety, you know. But I would have to think that, you know, next year, because again, what's going to end up happening is, number one, you know, you don't know if the cap's going to go down or stay level, because if there's nobody in the stands, that's going to be an issue. And so you're going to see a lot of the guys that are, you know, in the last years of their contracts, who may be, you know, in the 30s or all that, or even the late 20s, they may not be back. And the younger players who haven't had the chance to really get in there and do it, you know, start to take over.
From the 206, they want to know, what do you expect DJ Dallas's role to be with Seattle in 2020?
Well, I think probably more of maybe the chance to be a third down back and a special teams player. You know, same for Travis Homer. You know, and again, how quickly both of them can try to, you know, readapt here with the offseason where they don't have anything. But, you know, running backs can adapt. But I think that, you know, he could fit the role as a, you know, as a guy that can do it and maybe even help out on kickouts.
From the 253, they want to know, do you agree with Seattle's decision to go with multiple offensive linemen rather than one big sure thing?
Yes. I mean, I think that's the better way to do it, because, I mean, you think about particularly, you know, they, for less money than what you know, George Fant ended up getting for the Jets, you know, they get two potential starters at $8.5 million. I don't think that's bad at all, and I think that what you're looking at is that, you know, you know, Brandon Shell at right tackle, I think, can probably not make the mistakes that you had from Jermaine Ifedi. I think that B.J. Finney can be, because he's filled in, you know, for a bunch of games in Pittsburgh at center and guard, and he's done very well. So I think they're going to be okay on that one. And again, sometimes volume can fill things out pretty well.
253 wants to know, John, L.J. Collier does not like being called a bust. So do you think he has a breakout year?
I think he's going to have a good year. I really do, because I think he's going to end up being the starter. And, you know, it's, I mean, they had opportunities that they could have got him on the field. They just didn't. And they, you know, went with more of the experienced guys, which is understandable because, you know, here they are. They weren't the most talented team in the NFC, but they were a team that had a chance to get the number one seed. And so you want guys out there with more experience. But, no, I think, you know, he's not a bust. I mean, hey, when I even mentioned the problems of Jermaine Ifedi, he was not a bust, because say what you want, the guy did start here for 4 years. It's just that it was his starts graded well. Not really, but again, it's good enough to be out there for a starter for 4 years. I think Collier has the best chance right now to be the five technique.
206, over under one reception for Freddie Swain this season.
I'd take the under, because I think he's going to be more on the practice squad than he's going to be on the regular roster.
from the 425. They want to know if the Seahawks have to move on from Jacob Hollister, which teams could be interested in him.
You know, a team I wonder about, the team that traded him. The New England Patriots. I know that they drafted two tight ends, but I think that that could be one. I mean, get the seventh round pick back. Not that I mean, because it was only a seventh round pick, but I think you can get something for him because he's pretty talented tight end.
Yeah, they were desperate for tight end play last year. Didn't get it. They had one, and Jacob Hollister gave him up to Seattle. But right now, Seattle's tight end group pretty steep. Well, it'll be tough sledding for really anybody to make it out of that group. From the 425, John, if KJ Wright is cut, which teams could be interested in him?
You kind of wonder teams that have had guys like him or may have coached here. You know, I think maybe there would be interest in the Atlanta Falcons. I think maybe the Chargers, that could be one.
From the 206, they want to know, after signing Geno Smith, what does that mean for Anthony Gordon's role in 2020?
I don't see them having, I think, more practice squad than anything else. I know we got a $12.5 million signing bonus, but I think that he can go on the practice squad and be available and try to learn behind the other two guys.
From the 425, they want to know, if Cam Newton doesn't sign with a team right away, do you think he could possibly sit out 2020?
Nah, he'll find a way to play, and somebody will find a way to get him a job. I mean, it's just right now, he can't go get any physicals. He can't go to get a team physical, and he needs to get a team physical, and that's probably not going to be on the agenda for the next month or two.
Yeah, and I think teams would be flat out ridiculous to deny anybody of his talent a job, even if it's a backup job. And I think Cam's smart enough to know that, hey, the market's not there right now, but injuries, they can free up a spot here or there.
Exactly.
From the 480, they want to know, over under 7 touchdowns this year for Greg Olsen.
I think that's reasonable, yeah, because I think that, in the red zone, he's going to be effective. I think that, he's going to be, real good when they go in the zone defenses. So, no, I think 7 can be reasonable.
Yeah, and you got to wonder what Seattle's red zone offense is going to look like if Chris Carson and Rashad Penny aren't ready to go out of the gate. I mean, Carlos Hyde, he's a physical running back, but is he the kind of guy that can get in the end zone quite like Chris Carson? Maybe they do go to the air a little bit more down in that area of the field. From the 206, who's more likely to play in the NFL again, Antonio Brown or Percy Harvin?
I'd say Antonio Brown, but again, that's so far down the line. I don't see anybody going for Harvin right now. I just don't see it.
Yeah, Harvin hasn't been good since about 2014. He's been out of the league for, 4 years now? But he did mention a couple months ago that he was hoping to make a comeback. Don't know where that stands currently. From the 425, they want to know, when all of Seattle's tight ends are healthy, what does that rotation look like?
Well, I think that, Olsen or Disley, you'll have to fight it out in training camp to see, but I think both are going to get a chance, and I think that there may be a chance that they may use two tight end offenses.
What is the 206 wants to know, what is more important for Seattle's defense currently, finding a defensive tackle to stop the run or another edge rusher?
Well, I mean, I think it's one edge rusher, and that's Jadeveon Clowney. That, would make things a little more solid. I mean, because, again, you still have four options at the Leo position. So, I think at this moment, I think the run stopper right now is a little bit more important. But if you can get Clowney back, it's even better.
206 wants to know, you think Shaquem Griffin is in danger of missing the 53-man roster?
You know, I was thinking about that because I thought maybe he would be, because they have so many guys at the strong side, on the strong side linebacker position, and he's really at the back of the group as far as the pass rush. But again, he's such a good player on special teams. I think he might be able to slide by. But again, that's where, some of the spots are going to be a little bit tough to figure out, because, do they keep four tight ends? Do they keep five running backs, including a fullback? Those are going to be the real tight things, because the way I have it broken down is that I think they're going to end up keeping more linebackers than they normally do. And again, he could be one of them.
That is going to do it for text questions.
All righty. So that was on the Vizzy's Hard Seltzer text line. Coming up next, our daily dose of Dave's Grosby. It's our daily dose of the Gros.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Time for our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. So, David, kind of interesting as a standpoint is that we get the numbers for Carlos Rogers, and it turned out better, a little bit better than I expected. I thought it was going to be, you know, somewhere in the $2 to $3 million range. It turns out to be a 1 year deal at 2.75. And of course, they had offered, according to Mike Silver, 1 year, $3 million to try to get Devontae Freeman, but he was holding to a much higher number. I think they came out of this one really well.
Carlos Hyde, you mean, right, John?
What's that? Carlos Hyde, yes.
The running?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to be sure we're talking about the same guy. Yeah, look, the one thing from the Seahawks perspective, what cost them, you could argue, everything being what it was not having enough depth at running back last year. I mean, that ultimately cost them. And I understand it was flukish to lose two guys, but you got both those guys battling back from injuries this year. So it made sense to add another guy. And if he meets his incentives, it means he's had a good year. So I like the move. I always like the move by the Seahawks.
Yeah, no, I think that worked out really well because now this is one of the few teams in recent history that now has 2,000-yard runners. Now, again, I say that knowing that you know, it's a little different in Baltimore because you have Melvin Ingram, who had over 1,000 yards, and you had the quarterback Lamar Jackson with over 1,000 yards. But to have two running backs of the 16,000-yard runners on from last year, from the 1,000-yard runners, that's a pretty good combination.
And look, if any team, and I don't think it's going to happen, but if any team were to have 2,000-yard runners again, that one wasn't a quarterback, it would be the Seahawks, the way they like to play it. So I like this move when it was made. I know some people thought it was probably for too much money, but, you know, as long as that's incentives, if he makes those incentives, that's fine. It means he's having a good year, and the Seahawks are at their best in this offense when they run the ball effectively. It makes everything else work. We know this. We've seen this over and over and over again. It shouldn't need to be reemphasized. Makes Russell Wilson better, makes the team better. That's how they're built. That's how they want to function, and now they're in a position to do that.
No question about it. And so, and again, I think that you can see that they, and again, I know there's the debate about trying to, you know, get Russell Wilson to be, you know, a little bit more passing and all that stuff. I know I wrote for 710sports.com that, hey, just try to not run the ball. I mean, not throw the ball too much because, again, you know, you got the turnaround on the offensive line with all the changes there. You don't know how the pass blocking is. I personally believe the offensive line is going to be better because, you know, the two likely new starters that they have, and three maybe if it's Damian Lewis, are guys that John Snyder really wanted, and those were the targeted guys.
Look, Russell Wilson's been tremendously efficient over his career, but even he can be more efficient, and this gives him – the opportunity to be looking at records that people probably aren't looking at. I mean, he could be looking at a completion percentage mark that can be way, way up there because he's got the tools to add to the passing game, and it's a high impact passing game that they're looking at putting in. So, you know, Russell's done better. The team has done better when he hasn't thrown the ball as much. That's not a reflection on him. It's a reflection on the style they want to play. And they're in a position to play it this year.
Yeah, I see. And that's the thing that I think people don't take into account because, I mean, sure, they've had slow starts. They were better last year with faster starts in games, but they only had like five games where they had the lead at halftime. And, you know, you've got the three main formulas that Pete Carroll has. You know, you win the turnover battle, and, of course, the less that Russell throws, and I'm not saying going back to the 24, 25 passes a game, you know, keep it around 31, 32. That one works because, you know, he only throws like seven or eight interceptions, and, of course, the team can get the turnover battle, and that's so important because if you're in that top three, like Seattle often can be, and even with the defense that was suspect last year, I mean, you can see they can get to 11 wins. And if the defense gets better, which I think it has a chance to, then now you're going to have more halftime leads, and, you know, Pete Carroll's pretty good with those halftime leads.
Well, to me, there's just no argument that you want to be better late in the game. I mean, it's just period, end of story as far as I look at it. I mean, I have nothing against starting fast, but I believe in putting together a plan that sets you up to take the team out in the fourth quarter. And whether that's an unimaginative offense that runs the ball to soften up a defense, to make them vulnerable to some big plays in the fourth quarter, then so be it. I mean, you've got a great quarterback if you're in a comeback situation, so you're not worried about that. It's a very, very effective way to win football games. The Seahawks have shown that.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And I think, again, the formula just works. And why play around with the formula? Because, say, you know, and it's funny because, you know, checking around, and we'll see how it goes in Green Bay. But, and you know, Aaron Rodgers, I mean, they only run the ball like 25 times a game. And I think Aaron likes that because he's a West Coast offense quarterback. But, you know, the plan I think that Matt LaFleur is going to throw to him is that they're going to run the ball more. You know, they come back and, you know, they draft a quarterback to eventually replace Aaron Rodgers in Jordan Love. They come back in a second round and get a 245-pound running back in A.J. Dillon. They come back and get a H-back in the third round. I mean, they're trying to copy what the Rams do and what the 49ers do running the football.
Well, especially use the 49ers as the great example of that last year. I mean, their running game was supreme. I mean, it was exactly what the Seahawks want their running game to be and what it is quite a bit. They had a couple of heads, a bunch of different approaches, and found creative ways to run the ball and made Jimmy Garoppolo better. I mean, I don't think you hear quarterbacks who are fixated on numbers and stats, you know, are one thing. Guys like Rodgers, Russell Wilson, other guys who have been to the mountaintop and want to get back, I think understand that what's more important, the winning, the number that's the most important is winning. And I think you got those guys going in that direction because it does tend to make the passing game more effective.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that, you know, you also get the ability then, if you can have the lead, you can wear the defense down and then make it easier. Because, you know, if you look at the last year, you know, the most number of passes he threw in any quarter was the fourth quarter because he was, you know, constantly trying to get his team from behind. And it works because he's so good at doing it.
Exactly. Exactly. In a sense, it's always been the way to win in the NFL. I mean, as much as they've relaxed rules for the passing game and whatnot, having a good running game has always been an effective way to win in this league, going back to the old days, and it's still true today.
Eight of the top 10 rushing teams all made the playoffs. That's eight of the 12 teams that made the playoffs all had good rushing numbers. And, of course, San Francisco, you mentioned, they were number two rushing the football.
I mean, the numbers, like you said, John, the numbers speak for themselves. Run the ball, you're going to have success. So you've got a better chance of having success in the National Football League, regardless of how the rules change.
Mm-hmm. Hey, on a different subject, on the baseball front, yeah. What was your thoughts of what's going on now with all these minor league players being released? And, of course, I give the Mariners credit because at least they're going to, you know, try to maintain some of the stipends for them, even though they're, you know, they've all been massively released, unlike the Oakland A's, which basically put their players in a position from the minors that it's like, oh, you can't file for unemployment and we're not going to pay you the $400 a week stipend.
Yeah, it's sad commentary on the times, as I guess I'll answer that one, John. I mean, it's just, it's unfortunate. You know, you've got to run your business the way this is a very, 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 very good reminder that it is a business in baseball and that the players are at the butt end of it. And in the minor league system, I mean, in particular, I mean, these are guys who aren't making much anyway and now aren't making anything. So, I think it's a truly unfortunate aspect of the pandemic, and it affects baseball a little bit differently than other sports because of their extensive farm system. I mean, hockey's got a farm system to a degree, but, you know, the NFL's got their bought and paid for one, the colleges, and they don't have to worry about it like they do in baseball. But, you know, it's. I guess it's not surprising when teams aren't making any revenue and teams aren't just going to sit there and lose a ton of money.
Yeah, and I know that even down with the Angels, there's probably a lot of churning because I know we were talking to different people yesterday, and as Artie Moreno ended up laying off a lot of people, furloughing or laying off a lot of people in the organization.
Yeah, I mean, this is tough times for everyone, and sports is not immune.
No doubt about it. So what's on the agenda for the weekend?
Got a big charity event on Friday. Our virtual walk for Parkinson's Association is taking place this Sunday. We start at 9 o'clock with a big Zoom meeting. You can still join Team Graz online at apdaparkinsons.org/Graz, and we'll be out walking on Sunday morning.
Oh, that'll be fantastic. And again, give everybody the address of that.
apdaparkinsons.org/Graz.
Well, have a great walk, have a great event, and we will talk on Monday.
Sounds great, John. Thank you.
That is our Daily Dose of the Grizz. And, of course, I will be back tomorrow from 8 to 9. Curtis Rogers, thank you so much again for this week. And we'll talk again on Monday. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.